This is Junk Food Cinema.
Welcome back, everybody, to Junk Food Cinema, the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast that is so good. Well, normally so good. Tonight, I don't know.
Yeah, tonight, so good that we just did 10 minutes of show without Brian pressing record.
The episode.
That's how good it is. Before we in some way try to half-ass recapture whatever magic happened accidentally.
This is the podcast. This episode's so nice, we recorded it twice.
I dropped a pun so obvious and bad that it broke Brian.
Save it. We're going to come back to it because we're going to do this whole thing again. Fuck it. We're going to do it live.
We're going to do it live.
We're going to do it live.
We'll do it live. Fuck it.
This. So why don't we talk about what this show is, Brian?
Okay, so this is the end of all things, and I don't mean the end of the world. I mean the end of Junk Food Cinema's summer of 1987, which if you've been playing along at home, you can go back on iTunes and Stitcher and listen to all of the episodes that we've done about the best movies to come out in the summer of 1987, which, Cargill, I think you've talked about, is making a run for one of the best summers of all time.
Summer of 82 is hands down the best summer to ever happen. It has never been touched in 35 years of films coming out. No summer has ever been as good as the summer of 82. But for a long time, I felt that summer of 84 was a close second. You know, there was just so many good films. And of course, it has an epic film like Ghostbusters. And 87 doesn't have a Ghostbusters. It doesn't have a Star Wars. It doesn't have an E.T.
It does have a RoboCop, though.
But it has a RoboCop, and it has a Predator, and it has Running Man. And as you saw through this summer was so packed with great classic movies that we couldn't cover them all.
No.
And it is unreal. In fact, we're going to, in a short while, we're going to talk about a bunch of the films that we wanted to cover that we hope to cover in the future on the show.
That's important to note because I think a lot of people have mistakenly thought that because we didn't cover these movies from the summer of 87 during our summer of 87 series that we can never talk about them.
No, we will. We just won't cover them as part of a series. But one of the interesting things about the summer of 87 is it also has some of the very worst movies ever made.
Dear God.
We're talking about movies so bad that there are legendary movies that came out this summer that are considered legendarily bad that don't even touch how bad this is. I have a bottom five list right here that I put together of the five, what I think easily, handily, the five worst movies of this era that we covered. And it's a little fudging. Like, it's like, it's not exactly summer, but it's like, yeah, but we covered Princess Bride and Evil Dead and Lethal Weapon. And those were March and October.
If you're on your diet, we're all about the cheat day. So hit us up, Letterman. Let's go with that list.
Yeah, but also let me just tell you, one of the biggest flops of all time, Ishtar, came out this year. And Ishtar is not on our list.
It is not on our list of, oh, by the way, that's what we're doing this week. Eschewing our usual avoidance of irony, we are going to spend this episode talking, it is a recap of Summer of 87 for sure. We're also going to talk about those absolute worst of 87 films.
Because they are so bad that they must be mentioned, because we're talking about just the breadth of the summer. This summer was great. There is so much magic here. And yet, amid all that magic, there are a number of films, three of them fourth in a franchise.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second. There are three fours in here.
That's math I can't even do.
That is 12 bads. That's what that is. I mean, this is a summer so bad that amongst the two of the movies that are sequels, one of them being a fourth, didn't even make the list of how bad it is.
Jesus.
There are four fours in this year, and and Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol, not on the list.
Highly regarded as the second worst Police Academy movie of the Police Academy movie.
Not on this list.
Not on the list.
Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise. Not on the
list. Saved by James Hong. That movie saved by James Hong.
The Disorderlies. The Fat Boys movie.
Not on the list.
Not on this list. This is how bad it is. Steel Dawn.
Not on the list.
Patrick Swayze. As Swayze crazy as we are, we didn't cover Steel Dawn this summer.
So the movies we are going to talk about, Like, they have to be so bad that they are, like, really, like, in the garbage pail. And that's saying something, considering this was also the summer that the Garbage Pail Kids movie came out.
And we'll be getting to that in a moment, because, yes, the Garbage Pail Kids. Like, Ernest Goes to Camp came out this year. Like,
yeah.
And we actually legitimately Ernest Goes to Camp.
That's more of a, we're going to, this is probably where we should segue into the movies of 87 we didn't cover that take a drink because we absolutely will be covering.
I don't know if I want to do an Ernest Goes to Camp episode, but I do think we should do something on the Ernest oeuvre.
The Ernest oeuvre?
The importance of being Ernest.
Oh, God damn it. That's what it should be called.
I beat you to the dad joke.
I hate myself.
It was
myself.
Right there for the plucking. I was like, yeah.
I was still thinking about the Garbage Pail Kids movie, and it was fucking
We'll get back to the movie starring
don't
E
worry.
Flat.
Oh, starring Sean Astin's little brother.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Let's talk about some of the movies we wish we had covered that we just didn't have time for because you know this really was a jam packed year.
It was.
I wanted to cover Dragnet.
Oh yeah.
Which I talked earlier this summer about the great experience of going to see, you know, that great double feature of Masters of the Universe and RoboCop. That summer I also went and saw Dragnet at the drive-in. It was really good. Hellraiser came out this summer, and we will get to that, as I've talked about in another I think we talked about it in one of our Patreon
our minisodes
that we're going to do it as a double feature with Hellraiser 2, because for me Hellbound, Hellraiser 2 and Hellraiser are just, they're so perfectly linked, and they're such a wonderful, I consider them one movie.
Sure.
That they just shot separately.
Yeah, and kind of cheating a little bit, but it came out the same weekend as Over the Top, so I don't think it's cheating too much since we opened this series with Over the Top. Mannequin, a movie that I've always had a soft spot for.
Oh, God, yes, Mannequin, as opposed to Mannequin 2 on the Move.
Ooh. Terry Kaiser should not do sequels.
Really? Really?
Really not. Shouldn't do sequels. Angel Heart is a movie I want to talk about.
Oh, God, yes. We also talked about we wanted to make room for Assassination.
Yes.
Charles Bronson movie that I did not get to, we need to check out, which I found out AGFA has on 35mm.
Nice.
So that might be something that we make some phone calls and see if Greg McLennan can screen that for us or something.
Hi, Greg. Yeah, and then there are movies we talked about already, like things like we talked about Monster Squad. We talked about The Stepfather. There are a number of Adventures in Babysitting. There's a number of movies we didn't cover only because we'd already covered them.
Yes, and so this is a tremendous, tremendous year of cinema.
Oh, The Living Daylights. For sure. Is
oh, yes.
Cover.
The Bond film's so good, we didn't cover it this summer.
Okay. To be fair, that's only because, I'll throw myself under the bus. I like The Living Daylights. I like Timothy Dalton's Bond. I like what he did with it. I understand why most people don't. That being said, at the time we were putting this series together, we had not covered a single James Bond film. And much as I like The Living Daylights, I don't want it to be the first one out of the gate of the franchise that we talk about.
So instead, the first one will be Never Say Never Again.
Never say that movie's title again. But yeah, so that's another one. So take a drink with that as well. And you mentioned some of the ones that are so bad that they are not bad enough to be on our list. Yeah. So maybe we should dive into the ones that...
One moment. Oh, I do want to mention the one thing I will mention today is actually so bad it's good.
Oh,
but it's not so bad it's good enough that I wanted to devote an episode to it. And that is Patrick Swayze and Steel Dawn. Like, this is a movie we should have talked about. Like, a lot of people are like, wait, Patrick Swayze is in a post-apocalyptic movie?
And these assholes aren't talking about it?
Aren't talking about it? And it's because I recently sat down and watched it with a room full of friends. And it's not great. I mean, it's not great. The thing is, there are moments in it that are howlingly bad, and then there's some moments in it that are legitimately cool, but it never comes together. You know the one thing we talk about where when there's a movie, something we talk about like Megaforce, where it's like, look, I just love this movie. Like, I know what's wrong with it. I just love it because it never stops being entertaining. Like, you're either admiring how cool or awesome certain parts are, or you're laughing at how unspeakably bad it is. Like there are just movies like that that have that magic. And then there are movies that have 10 minutes of you just sitting there waiting for something to happen. That's Steel Dawn at times. There's a yeah, couple of, it slows down. The movie becomes decent for a while.
How dare it do that?
Yeah, but no, but that's just it, is it's not great and it's not awful. It's just being a movie, but it's being a movie that you don't really give too much of a shit about.
It's just sitting there being a movie.
Like, it's not, you know, the bizarrety of these post-apocalyptic bullies getting their asses kicked by fucking Patrick Swayze. And it's not watching Patrick Swayze kick the shit out of people in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. Like, it's like right in the middle where it's like, all right. But for a midnight movie, if it's one of those things where it's like, it's midnight, I've already had a couple beers, I've watched two movies already, and I want to watch something crazy, Steel Dawn would work. It'll work, but I just, it's not one that I can highly recommend. So this one is for you advanced junkies who will occasionally are willing to sift through some mediocrity in a film to get to the nuggets of gold, because there are some nuggets of gold here.
Don't even have a sword. I don't need one.
Not here, as in what we're the bulk of this episode.
No, because we're about to get in. Go. Oh my God.
This is like no nuggets, just turds. This is turds in paradise right here.
Four number fours came out this year, and the one of them we already mentioned, Citizens on Patrol.
Yeah.
The other three fours again, are amongst the worst movies ever made. These movies are so bad, they have polluted the collective of unconscious. And we just felt we would not be doing the summer of 87 justice without actually celebrating how awful this summer was at times.
Yeah.
Because remember, and this is a good place to start, this was the summer that killed canon.
Oh my God, it really was.
I mean, and we've talked about that a couple times.
We've talked about two of the three, in regular episodes, movies that we love, two of the three movies responsible for bringing down the canon group were Masters of the Universe and Over the Top, because in both cases, they decided to forego their model of spending $1 to $2 million on a movie, waiting for a couple of them to hit big, and then taking that money, making like 12 more movies. Instead, they're like, let's try to be a major studio and spend $20, $30 million on a movie. It didn't work for Masters. It didn't work for Over the Top.
And what else did it not work for?
Superman IV, The Quest for Peace.
The Quest for Peace!
The greatest hope against the threat of nuclear war is Superman.
I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons.
The greatest threat to Superman is Lex Luthor.
Smarter than I thought. We can make the world safe for war profits.
He's created the ultimate weapon to annihilate the Man of Steel.
You'd risk worldwide nuclear war for your own personal financial gain. Nobody wants war.
Superman 4, his most important adventure, The Quest for Peace.
The Quest for More Money.
The movie that more than any other movie makes you want to punch John Cryer in the face.
And which is saying something, because there's a lot of opportunities for you to want to punch John Cryer in the face. None so egregious as, oh my God, him playing Lex Luthor's nephew. Fuck this movie.
This is
a phrase you're going to hear a lot.
So bad, I still consider falling off a horse to be the second worst thing to ever happen to Christopher Reeve.
Oh my God! I want to disavow myself from that. Okay, you went there.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Did I cross a line?
You know what? You went there, and I respect it. But Jesus God, I can't even argue with it necessarily. But Jesus God, man.
It killed the entire Superman franchise. Like, this movie was so bad, as a fucking 12-year-old, I walked out angry from the movie theater and brokenhearted and disappointed. Like, I could not understand why anybody would make a Superman movie that looked like this.
I can't understand. I'm still reeling from that horse joke. I can't understand why they thought it was a good idea to the entire, like, canon of Superman villains They made one up and then cast a guy who was a former Chippendales dancer and then had him dubbed by Gene Hackman. So it was like he's like a clone of Gene Hackman, even though he looks nothing like Gene Hackman. And then he just...
It doesn't make any fun. Like, and what they really, what the thing that really boggles my mind is that they seem to be grasping at this such a noble idea. Superman decides he's going to get rid of all the nuclear weapons. And in the movie's one kind of cool scene, Superman flies into space with all the nuclear weapons, flings them around, and throws them into the sun.
Okay, Superman, you must be a science denier because... if you think there are going to be no ramifications from throwing megaton after megaton after megaton of nuclear warhead into the sun, I have to really question whether you're the protector of Earth or not. Because fuck's sake, man, that can't be a good idea.
They're not armed. It's just...
they're not armed!
It's not like we're... let us destroy the sun! Fire! Like, what the shit? Like, that just doesn't...
Well, that barrel of gasoline is sealed tight. I can't imagine what could possibly go wrong if you just set it on fire.
I don't think that's how science works.
Like, this movie knows? Really? Yeah. You're going to take movie?
No, but I was saying it's the one moment in the movie where, you know, it's kind of cool where it's like, oh, Superman's being Superman. And so then they decide to make a villain called Nuke. Because let's go ahead and drive this point home.
Here's the biggest bullshit of this movie that pisses me off.
Is there bigger bullshit?
Oh, the thing that pisses me off every time I see it. He walks into the UN and stands in front of all of these nations and goes, effective immediately, I'm getting rid of all nuclear weapons. And the entire room bursts into applause because they're all apparently on board with it. Motherfucker, if everybody's on board with disarmament... you shouldn't need Superman to do it. There has to be one country going, fuck you. You don't tell me what to do.
I feel like there was probably some, like there was a screenwriter who wrote this really great script. Just, this is headcanon. Really great script where Superman walks into the UN and says, I'm getting rid of all nuclear weapons. And then all of a sudden, several countries get together and go, we have to get rid of Superman. You don't just walk into... he is the most powerful man on Earth, and he just walked in and told everyone what to do. What happens when he loses his mind?
Yeah.
Is this him losing his mind? Like, yeah, sure. The world can be at peace as long as Superman is still here to protect us from each other. But what happens when Superman dies? We need nuclear weapons again. Why are we getting rid of them? Fuck this guy. He's become dangerous.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the quest for peace is Superman wants to make the world a safe place, and the world doesn't want him to. And then the countries go to war with Superman. Like, that's a fucking movie. Like, that's a great... that's... but, of course, that sounds like a movie in the Snyderverse that would be shot in, like, three colors.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman would be the best part of it.
This movie, as much as it hates its audience, doesn't hate Superman as much as Zack Snyder does. So you've got to give it that. I just read something about this movie that there were two directors offered... this job before Sidney J. Fury took over.
Is his name actually Sidney J. Fury?
Sidney J. Fury, or alias Menachem Golan's Yes Man. The first person was Richard Donner. They asked Richard Donner to come back. And he said, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. I just made Goonies. Go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. And then the next person set to direct was Wes Craven. Wes Craven was set to direct this, but didn't get along with Christopher Reeve.
Okay.
This at least could have been Swamp Thing. It is sad to think that this could have been at least as good as Swamp Thing.
Yeah, but I wonder if there's ever been a horror icon who's ever been handed a superhero before and did something really weird and different with it. I wonder if maybe Sam Raimi or somebody had ever been given, I don't know, Spider-Man. And
which, by the way... this movie killed canon Spider-Man because it also killed canon.
Could you imagine Sam Raimi's Spider-Man from 1989?
I would like to. In my head, I'm doing it, and it's great, and I'm enjoying it very much.
Head
Canon Group, shut down.
So here's my question. How the fuck do you not get along with Christopher Reeves?
Everybody
got along with Christopher
apparently
Reeves.
Apparently nobody on this set. Like, this is how bad this movie is. This is the testament to how fucking much of a shit show Quest for Peace is. It's called Quest for Peace and everybody's fighting on the goddamn set. You're like, not only did Wes Craven not get along with Christopher Reeve, Margot Kidder didn't get along with Christopher Reeve on this particular installment.
Well, maybe Christopher Reeve was in a weird place.
Yeah, he's probably in a place like, why the fuck am I doing a fourth Superman movie and it's this bad? Would probably be the place that he was
maybe,
in.
Maybe he was going through some shit, I don't know. Like, if everybody was not getting along with Christopher Reeve, maybe it's like that old saying, if you meet one asshole in the morning, then you met an asshole. But if you meet assholes all day, odds are you're the asshole.
He also didn't get along with Sidney Fury.
Sidney J. Fury.
Sidney J. Fury, attorney at losing franchises.
Okay, so that's bad movie number four.
Number one.
Can we go get some fresh air?
Let's jump ahead.
This is going to be hard to keep track of.
Because I really, speaking of canon.
You, by the way, the subtitle of this episode is You Think Dad's Bad.
Yeah. I have not seen this movie in forever. I'm going to pull the ripcord and just let you go. Death Wish 4.
The Crackdown.
The Crackdown.
Two kids looking for a new thrill.
Hey, just like I promised.
Yeah, sure.
Crack has claimed another victim. Dealers are making up their own rules, and no one is able to stop them. Somebody has got to crack down.
Who are you?
Death.
Charles Bronson in the biggest Death Wish ever.
They have to be stopped, Cousin.
Bronson is unleashed. Charles Bronson, Death Wish 4, The Crackdown.
Here's something you guys don't know. When the microphones are off, we don't stop talking about this shit.
No. And you can't shut us the fuck up.
Many, many times we have had similar discussions about the same shit. And Death Wish movies is among it, because Death Wish is such an interesting franchise to talk about, because there's so much right and so much wrong about it. And speaking of so much wrong, the look on your face, it's like you're discussing a little brother who got arrested for molesting the neighbor kid. And
are you going to make him fall off a horse too? What's going on
here?
And
I bring up that brother, and it's like, oh, how's your brother doing? You're like, well, he's doing all right at the halfway house.
Yeah.
But he keeps sending applications to Chuck E. Cheese, and I just don't. So talk about...
No, that's it. You pretty much described Death Wish 4.
I love that I struck you speechless.
Let me just say,
like, how often has that happened?
This is not as bad as Superman 4. It's not even as bad as Death Wish 5. However, this is the first time where it was like, I know that you've been old for a while, Charles. This is the point where it's just sad. This is where we've crossed over into, why are you still doing this? Please go sit down. Somebody look after him. Okay, it opens with a scene that I can only imagine would not have existed if Cobra hadn't come out the year before, where, like, these dudes in ski masks are, like, attacking a woman in an obviously, like, a parking garage that even Akbar would be like, come on, you know what I'm going to say.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. And so he goes and he just starts blowing these guys away, but then he goes up to one of them, takes the mask off, and it's him. It's himself lying on the ground, and it's like, okay, this is the shittiest dream sequence I've ever seen. And sure enough, that's what it is. And this becomes so Reaganized to the point that we've gone from him being a vigilante on the street, cleaning up the streets, to the point where it got silly, where he was basically a one-man urban renewal, like leveling city blocks.
It's Charles Bronson, physical gentrification.
I'm going to clean up these streets, and then I'm going to sell some condos. Go fuck yourself. To the point where he is just the mouthpiece for the war on drugs, where he's literally just going after the entire drug cartel. And there's a scene where he's pretending to be a waiter at a party for this mob boss guy, and he just happens to be in the room when he's in the bathroom when the mob boss, like, shoots a guy, and they hear him in there and they make him come out, and he's just like, hey, I didn't see nothing, no big deal, I'll even help you clean up the body. And it's like, nobody would have left him alive. There's no way they would have just let him walk out of here. And then he proceeds to, oh my God, it's just, the worst. Everything about it is the worst. Although there is an appearance from a young Danny Trejo in it, and it is directed by J. Lee Thompson, who, under regular circumstances, made some great Charles Bronson movies.
Which would be at least the second instance of young Danny Trejo in 1987, who, if as you guys will recall, we discussed earlier this year in The Hidden.
That is... Yes, Danny Trejo in The Hidden. That's correct.
Yeah, he was in the jail.
Sorry, I thought we were still talking about Charles Bronson. I'm like, he's not in The Hidden.
I'm amazed that you just have this look on your face like, Cargill, why did you make me talk about
it? Here's, again, this is another terrible canon film. This is Superman 4, The Quest for Peace was bad. It wasn't the only bad part 4 that canon released in this summer.
Yeah.
To cut down on the budget, there's a scene where he goes to the movie theater to meet a guy. They filmed it inside Cannon's viewing room to save money. Like, if this is not a studio, a franchise, an actor, a career circling the drain, I really don't know what is.
Yeah.
No thanks.
How many children have you killed with this shit?
So let's get to our third number 4. Bad's number 9 through 12.
I cannot follow this. I need an abacus. I don't know what's going on.
Jaws the Revenge.
This time, it's terrible.
Instinctively, man has always been drawn to the sea. Its beauty, its mystery, its secrets. But there is also a vague uncertainty, a sense of intrusion into an alien world, where man is unwelcome and completely at the mercy of the most terrifying predator on Earth. Jaws, the Revenge. This time, it's personal.
Oh my God, this movie. Oh, I swear to God, this time it's personal is like, that is, it's like the electric boogaloo of poster taglines. Like, that poster tagline went on to become the joke.
If I can go back for just a second to the Crackdown. Okay, the other
let's
thing
go
that,
back
I'm
to
sorry,
the Crackdown.
I'm sorry. The other thing that bugs the shit out of me about that movie is that they called it the Crackdown because Invasion USA and Missing in Action had been so popular that they wanted a more muscular sounding tough title. And the Crackdown is the best they could come up with. By the way, that's bullshit. The reason they called it the Crackdown is because crack cocaine was becoming huge in the late 80s and they wanted to fucking play off of that. So don't tell me it's because Chuck Norris was doing so well in Missing in Action. And also...
I love how it's they want to make it more masculine by adding colon.
Because yeah,
like let's add a colon.
Because
this movie needs more colon.
Charles Bronson
colon?
Is so old, they have to play up the masculinity.
It's colon
in its
Globus.
Title. Colon Globus. Colon and Globus. They use music from 10 to midnight in this movie is so bad. It's a Charles Bronson movie that can't have its own music. They have to take it from other Charles Bronson movies.
By the way, 10 to Midnight, a favorite past episode of ours.
Very much so.
If you guys are newer listeners, go back and check out our 10 to Midnight episode to listen to us talk about how much we love Charles Bronson and why this hurts so bad.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So you were saying...
Jaws the Revenge!
Jaws the Revenge. Oh, let's dive into this shit burger, shall we?
Like, this is what we're talking about. This is all the same summer, people. Movies are all out at the same time.
How did this happen? How did we, as a society, let this happen? That's what I want to know.
You know what? I'm going to say I was stoked for this fucking movie. I was so stoked. This is one of those movies. I've talked about this in a few past episodes where I was one of those kids that was so into movies that I would buy the novelizations beforehand and read the novelizations of movies I was really excited about. And broaden the experience. And this is one of those movies that I bought the novelization of Jaws the Revenge because I could not wait. I saw Jaws and I immediately, once I saw Jaws, I was like, there's a Jaws 2? Oh my God. And then Jaws 3 came out and as a kid, Jaws 3D was pretty fucking rad.
Yeah.
When you grow older, you're like, wow, that's not rad at all.
You realize how stupid kids are when you think about the movies.
And then when you get old enough, they remake it with dinosaurs. They did. Oh my God. If you don't believe me, sit down and watch Jaws 3D and immediately follow it up with fucking Jurassic World.
Dude, I love Dennis Quaid in Jurassic World. I'm sorry, Chris Pratt. I love Chris Pratt in Jurassic World.
Yeah, you do. Nobody does.
Oh my God, I was going to make a terrible joke about not even Anna Faris does, but that would be almost as bad as Christopher Reeve falling off a horse.
I don't know about that. That was pretty low for me. I feel really shitty about that joke.
Here's what's great about Cargill. He both simultaneously was like, my joke is better and worse. Like, that is, wow. Bravo. That razor swung both ways at the same time. Your joke is not better than mine because it's not worse than mine. Wow. Okay.
Amazing.
You were saying.
Amazing. Amazing Jaws the Revenge.
There is not enough beer in the world to make this bearable.
Oh my God, Jaws the Revenge. Okay, so follow me for those of you who have never suffered through it. We have mentioned this.
Follow you to the Caribbean?
To the Caribbean.
Okay.
Because
that's what fucking happened.
Because this movie is about the wife of Roy Scheider.
Mrs. Brody.
A Brody. Who he has died. Killed by a shark.
Killed by not enough money to bring him back to the franchise.
In truth, yes. I believe, actually, if I remember correctly, he died of a heart attack because of his stress level of all the shit that he dealt with. But his son, following in his footsteps, then gets mauled by a shark and killed. And the wife is brokenhearted, says, fuck this, I can't take it anymore. I gotta get out of this fucking shark infested town.
Yeah, why are we staying in Amity? Shit keeps happening here.
Let's get out of Amity. So she decides she's going to go to the Caribbean and chill the fuck out.
Uh-oh, but wouldn't you know it?
Wouldn't you know it? A whale gets harpooned and...
Because apparently this movie takes place in the 1800s.
Well, no, there were still lots of... especially illegal, but lots of fucking whaling going on in the 80s and 90s.
I forgot you were a whaling expert. Continue. I'm sorry, I'll call you Ishmael from now on.
All right.
We're talking about these movies and whaling jokes are throwing you off. Come on, Cargill.
There's that moment where it's like, do I mention that I'm actually a descendant?
No,
all right.
just no.
Just let it go.
You're descendant of fictional characters. Continue.
Yes. Yes, that must be it. So anyhow, a whale gets harpooned and is trying to make its way back home to its ancestral home in the Caribbean. And the shark that killed the son Brody gets a whiff of the blood, follows the whale 1,000 miles down the coast to the Caribbean, ending up at the same island as Mama Brody.
The only thing that would have saved this movie is if another part 4 came in, and right before that whale dies and the shark eats it, it gets scooped up by the fucking Enterprise. Like, that would have been the only way to save this part 4, is to have another part 4 fly in and do something ridiculous.
That might... I mean, look, this is a movie that we have...
Okay, you keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Because I keep trying to get to this one line, you keep cutting
me off. Sorry.
We've mentioned this movie several times because Michael Caine dropped one of the greatest actor quotes of all time about this movie, which is, I've never seen Jaws the Revenge, but by all accounts, it's terrible. What I have seen is the house that it paid for, which is bloody magnificent. And that is one of the most baller things I've ever heard an actor say. I have a great respect for him and actors like him, like Samuel L. Jackson. Guys who, like, with it, when Michael Caine's, in Michael Caine's career, his dad was a coal miner. And so he was always working. And at some point he was asked why he was in so many turkeys and so many weird movies. And he just explained, he said, look, my dad used to go down in a mine and dig coal. And every day he'd go down and dig coal, whether he wanted to or not. I'm fortunate enough that I get to do what I love. I don't have to dig coal. I get to act. why would I be picky about what I'm going to act in? Like, I've gotten to do a lot of great movies, but they're not all great movies. I've got to work. It's a job. I'm going to go to work. And so he goes to work and he does these movies, and then he gives you the Michael Caine you pay for. Like, it doesn't matter what movie it is. Michael Caine fucking shows up, and Michael Caine fucking shows up in this movie, and Michael Caine can't save this fucking movie.
My cocaine cannot save this movie. Two things you need to know about Michael Caine in this movie. First and foremost, he accepted the role after reading the first line of the script. So you're like, oh, it must have been a really great script with a really captivating opening. Nope, the opening line was, fade in Hawaii, and he wanted to go to Hawaii.
Sure, why not?
The other thing to know about Michael Caine is that because of this film, he was not at the ceremony to accept his Oscar for Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yeah.
This is the reason he didn't accept...
You know, I've always admired... Here's the thing, is I've always admired baller people who don't show up for their Oscars. Like, this is one of my favorite Oscar stories. Like, my favorite Oscar stories are all people who missed their Oscars. My second favorite, of course, is Eminem, who didn't take it seriously at all because he's like, they're never going to give me an Oscar. I'm not an Oscar winning guy. They're never going to give it to me. So he stayed home to watch cartoons with his daughter and fell asleep on the couch and had no idea he was an Oscar winner. Like, imagine waking up the next morning and checking your answering machine, because that's what he had at the time. And imagine finding out that you won the Oscars the next day after you woke up, you know, after, you know, just chilling out with your daughter. That's kind of adorable.
Imagine waking up every morning and remembering you're in Jaws 4, The Revenge. Yeah.
Is that a thing you think about, though?
Roy Scheider was offered a cameo, but he declined, saying, and I quote, and I fucking love this, Satan himself could not get me to do Jaws Part 4.
That's kind of fucking awesome.
I love Roy Scheider. This fucking movie.
Yeah. I want to tell my favorite, by the way, George C. Scott, who was up for getting an Academy Award for Patton, said, no, thank you. I'm going to stay home and watch a hockey game. And so he stayed home and drank and watched a hockey game and was not there to receive his Oscar that he won. So, yes. So this fucking movie only gets worse from when the fucking shark shows up. Like, how bad a movie do you have to be that the movie gets actively worse when the shark shows up?
As Michael J. Fox said in Back to the Future 2, shark still looks fake. Fuck this movie. I love Jaws so much. The only good thing about Jaws 4 is it makes people look more favorably upon Jaws 2. So thank you very much. Directed by Jeanette Zwark, who also directed movies for the Canon Group, who made Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. God damn it!
Maybe he had a heart attack. Too much fatty food. Give him a full of cholesterol, you know.
I'm curious where we go next.
I mean, to hell, to sleep.
I mean, we've already mentioned Garbage Pail Kids, so I guess we could go to Garbage Pail Kids. Because, like,
it is still, to its credit, the most successful movie of all time based upon trading cards. And that is something.
Once upon a time, or was it more recently, there was a young boy named Dodger. He was the sort of child who was always left out of things. Until now.
What's that?
They came out to help us.
Meet the Garbage Pail Kids.
The Garbage Pail Kids movie. They may not be pretty, but boy, they make great friends. The Garbage Pail Kids movie.
And it had a very brief window of reparatory success. They used to play it like every 6 months to a year here in Austin as a midnight movie, and it packed the fucking house. I remember the first time they played it down at the Alamo. Somebody programmed it. I want to say it was Zach programmed it. And they were like, God damn it, why the fuck are we doing this? Shit. Fine, whatever. And we'll program it for you. You keep pushing it. We'll just show it once. And Tim League rolls up in his car and goes, what the fuck? And starts flipping out because he goes inside. He goes, why are people still waiting outside? Why are they waiting outside? Why haven't you let them in yet? We need to get these people in the movie. The movie is supposed to start in a few minutes. And Zach had to calm him down and go, Tim, this is the overflow. We're sold out.
Whoa. Why?
And he was like, wait, what? Like,
why?
Yeah. He was like, wait, we sold out a full house at the Alamo, Colorado, to show Garbage Pail Kids. And there's a whole theater full of people standing outside wanting to see it still. And so they programmed a midnight that night. And people waited around for 2 hours to watch this fucking movie.
On the one hand, Tim League, great, 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 great man.
Yes.
On the other hand, what the fuck were you thinking, Tim? It's the Garbage Pail Kids movie. What were the fuck were you thinking, everyone in that theater? It's the Garbage Pail Kids movie. This movie gives you nightmares for all the wrong reasons. Although
the people that love it,
I don't get
it.
I really don't get it. I don't get the love for this. It's
I saw it opening day.
And you're bragging this.
you do in your Charles Bronson voice. No, look, Garbage Pail Kids was a really popular underground fun thing. Like Cabbage Patch Kids, you've got to understand, was such a part of the fabric of the pop culture in the early 80s. Like everyone wanted a Cabbage Patch Kid. I wanted a fucking Cabbage Patch Kid. We all wanted it. You could not get away from it. The whole idea of them that they were selling us was fucking amazing. And it was huge. And every time a department store would get a stock of them, there would be parents lined up outside and they would be fighting over them. It was the first thing that was in stores that you actually saw stuff on the news about parents getting into fist fights over the last Cabbage Patch doll. And so it was such a big thing that when all of a sudden there was this counterculture thing that came out giving the finger to it, this very Mad Magazine punny sort of thing, all of a sudden that was fucking cool.
Yeah.
Wow, that was fucking punk rock, man. You could have stickers with vomit and fart jokes and all this stuff, and all the cool kids were doing it. Like, it was a hip fucking thing. And to be the kid who had, like, when the first run came out, who had a sticker book with every single one, because every card had two different names. So you actually had to collect every card twice. And it was such a big deal that, yeah, they made a movie of it. God, that looks fucking weird. I got to see it. You know, as 12 years old, it's like, of course I'm going to fucking see this movie. Opening day, I saw this movie. Holy God, is it a thing? There's a character named B flat. That is the sound of his fart. I'm not going to let you talk. Every time you speak, I'm going to cut in. No, please talk about Garbage Pail Kids.
When one of the stars of the return of the Killer Tomatoes tries to get his son out of having to do this movie, you have to start questioning everything. John Astin, God love him, his son, not Sean Astin, but in fact Sean Astin's brother, Mackenzie Astin, agreed to be in this movie without telling his dad, and then gave his dad the script after already agreeing to be in it, and John Astin read it and then immediately tried to get his son out of this movie. I think that says everything you need to know. It is grotesque, but not in the same way that the source material was grotesque.
It's a children's John Waters movie.
Yeah, that's not a thing that should be.
It's really not. But that's what this is. It's a children's John Waters movie.
I'm doing this a lot in this episode, and I apologize. But
no,
dear God,
we love movies. We love movies,
which is why
we want to love them. Which is why we don't do episodes like this.
No.
And yet, this summer, keep in mind, folks, there was a point in time you could go to a theater and see several of these on the same marquee. You could go to a drive-in movie, and two of these could have been paired together.
Oh, that's the worst kind of Russian roulette. I do want to say that the version they almost made of this, I'd be a little more interested in. Which is that John Carl Beekler, who directed Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, was going to direct this as a straight-up horror movie, and which makes a lot more sense when you see the goddamn design of these horrendous little fuckwits like
It was creepy.
And you know what pisses me off about this movie?
Oh, wait. What 12 things piss you off about this movie?
No one ever acknowledges, to the extent that they deserve, that these things look hideous. No one seems to give a rat's ass. Like, I get it that they have to go to, like, the state home for the ugly, but it's like the Howard the Duck problem, where it's like, you should be losing your fucking mind when you see these things. If you're in the real world and you encounter one of these things, you should be vomiting and then dying. And instead, people are like, huh, they're ugly. I'm like, no, they're not ugly. They're fucking monsters that don't exist in this world. Have a bigger reaction to that.
I feel like you're that guy from the Simpsons episode that tries to explain to everyone Homer Simpson. Who just, oh, look, I'm Homer Simpson. I'm just going to touch all the buttons.
Yeah, I'm, what's his name? Yeah, I can't remember that guy.
Yeah, I know, you know what I'm talking about now. Like, you're the guy who's like, Grimes. Look at them. They're Grimes. Not just, they're not just ugly. They're hideous. Yeah. You should be vomiting right now.
Yes, Grimes. Yeah. Fuck that movie.
La, la, la. Hi, I'm Valerie Bonnet.
Moving on from the Garbage Pail Kids.
To probably, okay, so Jaws the Revenge was a disappointment. It really was shitty. But I think, for my money, the most disappointing movie of this year was House 2, The Second Story.
Last year, audiences everywhere thrilled to a terrifying film about the horrors of home ownership. House. Now, there's an all-new house.
Looks like you got some kind of alternate universe in there or something.
With brand new owners.
Charlie. Huh? Got it.
And it's getting weirder.
Look, it's a prehistoric bird.
I got you, Jeff.
I've seen enough tragedy and disaster to make you want to upchuck in your shorts.
House 2, The Second Story.
This place gives me the creeps.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How was that disappointing?
Have you seen House?
Yeah.
House is great.
House
is really legitimately good. It's a movie that when you watch now, it's something we've talked about covering at some point, and we probably will. I love it. It is a great horror comedy from 1986. It's got its dark moments that go really dark, and then it's got its great comedy moments. And it's got William Catt, who I love. And in that movie, it's got George Wendt. And George Wendt plays the neighbor and gets caught up in all the various house adventures. And so when they set out to make the second movie, they were like, what does this movie need? What worked about the first movie that we could continue in the second movie? Well, the first movie had a star of Cheers. So what if we got another star of Cheers? And so they get John Ratzenberger to play an exterminator, who, by the way, is completely unfazed by all the dimensional shenanigans in the house, which I get the joke. And the joke is kind of like, that's the one, that's what kind of sold the movie, was, oh, I see what your problem is. It looks like you got multiple parallel dimensions.
Yep. See, there it is. I should still be on Cheers. All right, moving on.
No, don't say that, because John Ratzenberger is fucking great in Battle Truck. And we have sung the praises of Battle Truck for years. This movie all of a sudden goes from being a horror movie to being a horror comedy to being just a straight terrible comedy. And everything misfires here. They're playing around with some really great concepts. You know, here you've got this zombie great-grandfather from the Old West who's a badass, and you've got adorable little monsters, and it should be fucking scary, and instead it's a nonsensical romp through doorways to really shitty sets and just derails the entire franchise in a way that just, it doesn't work. Like, I could say, hey, watch Evil Dead 2 and House in the same night and watch two fun comedies that have fun with these things. And I can't name anything that I would pair House 2 with that isn't on this list that we just shared.
Yeah, like, because a forced enema is not on this list. I get it.
It's just, it's a franchise that deserves better. By the time you're talking about fours in franchises, it's okay. All right, I get it. Like, you're out of steam, but you can't say no to the money.
No, now, which one is it where, which one of these House movies is it where Kid and Play go to college?
That's House Party 3.
Oh, okay. All right. I was mistaken. You know what?
Which makes House Party 2 look like House Party 1, apparently.
Again, you're doing math. I can't calculate. But
it's my second Jay and Silent Bob reference today.
It is. House was part of the reason that House is good is that it's based on a story by Fred Decker. And it's directed by Steve Miner. And you have real people attached to that. House 2, it has John Ratzenberger, I guess.
It's such a bad movie. Me and my wife did a double feature of it last year. We watched both houses because she had never seen it.
A plague on both the houses.
Yeah, no, because she had never seen House. So I'm like, let's watch House. And of course, you know, we then spent an entire evening talking about how I wanted William Katt's plunging V-neck sweater. And she's like, no. You wear plenty of bad clothing. You are not going that bad. And then she's like, there's a second one. I'm like, yeah. And we had plenty of wine at that point. She's like, fuck it, let's watch it. I'm like, all right, tell me when to turn it off. And she couldn't believe
That's a dare. That's not a viewing experience.
I know. And we got through the whole fucking thing.
Oh, my God.
And it was just miserable. And it was worse than I remembered. Like, I remembered as a kid it being bad and it being the terrible sequel. But I was like, but Ratzenberger was kind of funny. And it's like, oh, no, Ratzenberger really isn't that funny in this.
When he's surrounded by horror legends like Bill Maher, how could that have gone? Bill Maher was in movies?
Oh, yeah.
No, I did not know
this. Bill Maher was in bad movies.
I didn't know this about Bill Maher.
Bill Maher, oh, what's the terrible one that he was in?
House 2, The Second Story.
No. There's one that's even worse than that.
House 3.
No, there's some movie where he's essentially playing a cross between Indiana Jones and what's his name from Romancing? Michael Douglas from Romancing the Stone.
Is it Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death?
That is what it is.
I'm guessing off the top of my head.
A favorite of my in-laws. They love truly shitty movies, and that's one of their favorites.
Well, you should introduce them to this episode if they haven't heard the podcast yet.
Bill Maher plays, Bill Maher is like the Indiana Jones analog in that, and it's just not good. But at least that knows it's terrible and is having fun with it. This is Bill Maher's just in another shitty movie. This is so bad. And it's disappointing because this could have been an interesting horror franchise because it was just about haunted houses.
They made two more, which is crazy to me, but they made two
more.
They were,
if I remember correctly, they were direct to video and barely count. They're like the Scanners movies.
Scanner Cop.
Where they get to the point where they're just like, yeah, we're just putting them out on video now.
Yeah. Man.
I guess I think of all of you as well, my family now.
That's the summer of 87 for you folks.
And all of that, without even mentioning Teen Wolf 2, that is how bad some of these movies were.
Oh, that's right.
Were.
Teen Wolf 2 was this year as well. Yeah. I forgot that Teen Wolf 2 was 87. Yeah, there was as great a summer as this was, as many classic films as came out in this era. You know, like truly classic films. Like films we're still going to be talking about in 20, 30 years, like RoboCop, like Dirty Dancing, like Predator. Like not Jaws the Revenge. Well, we might still be talking about, we'll be old men going, fuck that movie. God, the shark follows her 1,000 miles. Christ almighty.
You know, Mario Van Peebles wrote his own role for that. I could believe it. I've seen him in the movie. I believe he wrote all that himself with his terrible Jamaican accent. And oh my God.
I love that we keep going back to Jaws the Revenge.
Everything goes
back
to Jaws.
And falling off a horse.
And you know what? That franchise fell off a horse. Clearly, that's what happened.
It did. They killed. I mean, that was the last Superman movie for 19 years. They kept trying to make another Superman movie, and they could not get one off the ground.
Not even with Nicolas Cage and Tim Burton.
And written by Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Like, that's how crazy the 90s were. That's how many drugs people were on at that point. That sounded like a good idea.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us on this. And there's a reason we have to do this, because in order to understand where the threshold is. When we talk about movies that are cheesy, we talk about movies that, you know, don't have a lot of critical acclaim, but we still love them. It's important for you guys to know that there is a basement. There is a basement to the tolerance.
There is
that
a
we
place
have.
We hide the bodies.
Yes.
And
it's right under John Ratzenberger.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, yeah.
Oof. Well, thanks for joining us on this episode. This is the very last installment of Summer of 87. Next week, we will be doing a brand new movie outside of that. We don't know what it is yet.
I know what it is.
Oh, Cargill knows what it is yet, and we will be covering that. And I just want to remind you guys to please go to iTunes, go to Blog Talk Radio, listen to our past episodes. If you go to iTunes, rate and review us. That really helps us out. Follow us on Twitter, at Junk Food Cinema Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. If you really like the show and you are hoping that we will never have to watch movies like House 2 and Superman 4, The Quest for Peace and Jaws the Revenge and the fucking Garbage Pail Monsters, please consider giving to our Patreon, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema, so that we can continue to bring you episodes about the movies we actually like, because that's kind of what we're supposed to do.
Yep, the movies that we love,
yes,
actually.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I'm sorry. We're so far in the basement
right now. Like, the crackdown really touched you in a bad place. Like, I need to hold up the doll and be like, show me on the doll where the Cannon Group touched you.
Still not as bad as Death Wish 5. Just going to reiterate that. Cargill, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Massawyrm, MassaWyrm. And I have a new book that just came out. It's called Sea of Rust. It's a post-apocalyptic robot Western. And I'm really proud of it. So I hope you can get it wherever you buy books. You can get it an audio version on Audible. You can get yourself a version on Kindle. And you can find it wherever you buy your physical books.
See, I want to buy it, but then I know what's going to happen is I'll be reading it and I'll take the dust jacket off and it'll just be a novelization of the movie Steel Dawn. And I'm going to be like, God damn it, Cargill! I have been fooled.
Cargill 4, The Revenge.
No.
The Crack Venge.
The Quest for Crack.
The Quest for Crack Venge.
Good night, everybody.